The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and separation of church and state are values you hold, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you. The Nonprofits. I'm Dennis LeBay, the wizard, along with Jeff D., the fighter, and Russell Glasser, the thief. We have no cleric, of course, but I have a magic item that can cure light wounds once a day. We're coming to you live from the basement gaming table at the Austin Freethought Library in Austin, Texas, on the 1st of March, 2017. This game is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, and unlimited pizza and Diet Mountain Dew. If you want to learn more about the ACA, you can call their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. The Nonprofits Adventures live every first and third Wednesday of every month from 7:30 to 9 Central Time. And if you follow the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com, you can even draw aggro by joining our chat room. So sit back, look over your character sheet, and roll initiative.
Are there any girls there?
Where are the Cheetos?
Hi, everybody.
I'm attacking the darkness.
It's March.
How's it going?
Drawing aggro, though, good.
That's a computer game. Yeah, I know.
Probably, you know, these days more people are going to be familiar with that.
Than
with old-timey. I don't know what the analogy would have been.
I'm sure there was tanking and all that stuff, but they didn't call it that.
That came later.
You just said you were a fighter, and everybody assumed, oh, the tank.
Right. You just did what it made sense for your character
to do,
have it, you know, pre-engineered for you by the rules that is going to be your job.
Right. Let's hope that's not a metaphor for life, but okay, yeah. Cool.
I talk a lot about tanking in social contexts. you know, I don't want to deal with this person today. Would you tank for me or something like that?
That's great.
I wind up being the tank.
That's awesome.
Got to deal with some issues with my son's grades. Would you tank the teacher?
Yeah, I assume that if you're dealing with social media at some point, you'll attract too much aggro.
On the one hand, you know, speaking of someone who comes from the early days of RPGs, as does Dennis here, it's on the one hand handy that we've got terms like that, which have arisen to describe different roles in RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for the purpose of being able to communicate about it, but it's terrible from the standpoint of if you see role-playing games as a thing where you are a unique individual and not some cookie cutter
right
role.
As I think I've mentioned before, you know, I like team games and which have a lot of game mechanics. And I'm going to start rambling about games, I guess.
We're just getting started. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Part of what people love about us is that we're nerds. At least that's what they say in their emails.
Yeah, I wind up playing a lot of team games and gravitating towards the roles in the team games that are critical to the overall success of the game,
well, sure.
but do not get favored by a lot of players who want to, you know, have meters that show their jacked up DPS numbers. And so they don't want to play like the healer, or they don't want to play the guy who stands in front of the rest of the group getting hit in the face so that everybody else can
specific, even more so. I mean, as far as I know, there's a bunch of different variants on the fighter class in D&D, but not one of them is the getting hit in the face guy. What is he like? He's like heavily armored except for his face, and his whole thing is your opponents have to make called shots to hit him because
– Right. Well, I'm thinking of Team Arena games like Heroes of the Storm. and the much more popular League of Legends. But
uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I'm a role player from way back, and what I want is not so much a carefully engineered team as a ragtag group of weirdos, each of whom is completely unique and does the things that they do. And then out of that, that group figures out how to operate, not, oh, we are missing an X, therefore we can't start until we have one of those.
But I like carefully engineered things. They're neat.
A misfit team of lovable nerds.
It is undeniably convenient to have a language and stereotypes like that so you can communicate about it easily. What the thing that I like makes it a lot more tricky and complicated to succeed, right? I totally recognize the limitations of what I'm asking for, but what I'm asking for out of that, you get more interesting stories.
Yeah, you want the terminology to be descriptive instead of proscriptive.
See, there you go. You know, you're using terminology to clearly communicate about the thing I'm talking about.
What a nerd.
In that case, I think that was probably the right way to put it. So let's just start with some male. There's no girls there, so let's start with some male.
Okay, then I'm getting drunk. For people who aren't in on the joke, you should Google Dead Alewives Dungeons and Dragons and just sit through it on YouTube because it's a classic and you're missing a cultural reference that's important. Well, not really.
It's increasingly less important every day, but
no.
Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
But see, now that we have the internet, like, old memes never die. They just shelved for a while and then they come back. Like, I mean, people are still Rickrolling each other after years. It's rarer than it used to be, but every once in a while it'll pop up and you'll go, oh, I remember that.
Right. And people will go, what's that?
Yeah. It's a penis. Go ahead.
Oh, me go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're doing the news, right?
Yeah, the news.
Show us the news.
Man, okay. Well, we're just going to get right into Donald Trump, I guess. Specifically.
What religion-related Donald Trump secular ethics kind of question.
Yeah, I couldn't resist this one because Donald Trump and Pat Robertson are indirectly involved each. And this was submitted by Changer of Bits on Twitter, hashtag nonprofits news. Thank you very much. Pat Robertson is very concerned about an ongoing issue, which is that some witches have threatened to curse Donald Trump. And
you mean a magical kind of cursing, not just shaking your fist at the sky.
Just fuck you, Donald Trump.
Calling him just deservedly mean names.
Yes.
Oops, did I
No, these are, I mean, and, you know, with the trolliness of the Church of Satan and stuff like that, which we talk about way too much on this show, but – you know, it's never easy to tell whether the people saying things like, oh, we're going to cast a curse on him are serious or whether they're just trying to get a rise out of him.
Right.
But like the great thing about Donald Trump is that absolutely everything gets a rise out of him. So he can – so, I mean, I would not be surprised to find out that he takes this thing seriously. And indeed, when I looked up witches and Trump on Google, all I see are like right-wing websites being outraged about it. You got your Fox News and your WorldNet Daily. Anyway, Pat Robertson in particular on the 700 Club program, I believe last Monday, because this was posted on February 28th, that's yesterday, a viewer informed televangelist Pat Robertson about a satanic cult that the viewer's father is part of that allegedly have put curses on my son and I. That's my son and me, dude. And wondered if the curses could hurt us if we were both Christians. That's a
wow. Yeah. Would it be splash damage or what?
I'll tell you, the answer to that really doesn't the if we're both Christians part is not relevant. to the answer to that.
But the answer is yes, with or without the Christians.
Yeah. No, the answer is no.
That's what I mean. It could hurt your feelings.
Yes, I mean, no.
Yes, it could hurt your feelings.
Well, I'm glad that you brought this up, Russell, because it's important for us to spring the defense of these poor witches, dare I say, magic users, because as tanks, we need to be in the front ranks.
That's right.
Soaking up the aggro while the enemy team, of course, is they're all shouting, you know, kill the wizard.
Right.
Fools, kill the one in the dress.
Sorry, go ahead.
We'll have no Leroy Jenkins, though.
The viewer was told by Robertson that they have to pray away the curses and send those curses back where they came from.
Is this these curses are these sorcery or witchcraft or magery, thaumaturgy?
I don't know. You need different kind of cure spells to get rid of each one, right?
Is it from a book or a scroll or some sort of an amulet?
Yeah, it depends. And also it depends on what your saving throw is,
right? Does it require a hex bag? We need to know.
Oh, boy.
The viewer was
Oh, boy.
Pat Robertson also insisted, I guess took the opportunity to bring up, that there were witches who were trying to curse President Donald Trump. I read that a bunch of witches have gotten together to put a curse on Trump, and I think the Christians need to be praying for him to defend him. Co-host Wendy Griffith suggested that there were probably millions of Christians who were currently in prayer canceling out those curses by the witches.
Oh, how wonderful.
That was from theoswatch.com.
Wow.
And thank you again, Changer of Bits.
So, right.
Magic warfare.
So there's no magic.
Nope.
Curses don't work.
Right.
They're not a thing. Yeah. But good grief. I mean, religion is nothing if not a made-up solution to a made-up problem. And here we have two different religious groups with their individual ridiculous religious beliefs that are false. And one of them is triggering the other. I guess throwing something out there that the other side can then use for their own marketing.
I guess.
Was there anywhere in that news story, was there quotes, comments from the actual Wiccans?
Not in that news story.
Is it in fact a thing, or is it there? Are there, because there's Wiccans, but a lot of them don't necessarily think of magic as a D&D kind of lightning bolts for your fingertips kind of thing. And so I'm wondering if this was actually just Christians making up stuff to say to other Christians. Wiccans even involved. Not that I don't think a lot of Wiccans believe some pretty stupid stuff.
I'd like to know the specifics of the curse.
No offense.
What's it supposed to do?
I'm frantically Googling things trying to find a useful story.
The curses are much more in line with what historically people thought of as magic. It's one thing that's kind of bothered me about D&D since forever is if you go back and read the kinds of things that so-called, you know, practitioners of magic back in like the late Middle Ages or whatever actually did, it was all about talking to spirits to get them to tell you where they buried their treasure.
Right.
So it was get rich quick schemes, right? And curses.
Yeah.
That's like 98-99% of all of it. They didn't believe in lightning bolts from their fingertips.
Right, right.
Either.
No magic missile. Yeah.
Guess why? Well, a thing like a curse, you can say you've laid a curse, and then you just sit back and wait for something mildly inconvenient to happen to the target,
right,
and you take credit for it, right? Right.
Yep.
And I don't know.
Bullseye around that.
The finding treasure thing
yep.
is pretty much garden variety fraud. Where you get somebody, you convince somebody that you can do magic or talk to the spirits or whatever, right? And you get them to pay you to do it. And then you tell them where the treasure is hidden. And by the time they've gotten back with their dirty knees and their shovels, you have fled with the money that they paid you.
Right.
That's how that works.
So
you know, like fantasy novels and fantasy RPGs, really, that nothing even remotely like what that is was ever really believed
right
by anyone, even the ones who actually believed that there was something and weren't just tricksters.
I've got a story here from Rolling Stone that's related. I mean, not that Rolling Stone is necessarily an unopinionated source, but it's quoting singer Lana Del Rey, who has joined the effort and tweeted, "At the stroke of midnight, February 24th, March 26th, April 24th, May 23rd, ingredients can be found online." Said
for a ritual, that, obviously.
I mean,
it's
a tweet. Yeah. Occultists noted that on those four dates, practitioners of witchcraft would congregate for a mass ritual for a mass ritual with the hope that their effort resulted in Donald Trump's removal from Oval Office. From the Oval Office. A representative for Del Rey confirmed to Pitchfork that the singer's tweet was in support of those efforts, with the necessary ingredients including an unflattering photograph of Donald Trump. That's easy, pretty hard to find.
It's hard to find a flattering one.
A small bowl of water, a small nail, a tiny stub of an orange candle, and a tower tarot card.
Wow.
Good grief.
Yeah. See,
do they make decks of just like all one kind of tarot card like that? Like the kind that they use in
You have to open
cheating.
You have to buy small packs and then open them and you get a random assortment of cards with different rarities. And play out.
You can go to some shops now and they'll have just bowls full of like the land cards.
They'll just have the crappy cards.
It's like
Mountain. That's one of the tarot cards, isn't it?
Right.
Swamp.
Yep.
And plains. I'm forgetting one. Mountain, swamp, plains, and forest. Oh, forest.
Yeah, sure.
Forest.
Tarot cards with those black borders, man. They're really good.
Just like the things I've said in the past about I forget if it's the Church of Satan or the Satanic Temple or one of those groups.
Yeah.
Like, I'm entertained by the things they do, and yet I'm also hesitant to throw my full support behind them when, either way, it's just supporting bullshitting.
Right. Even if they're smirking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, my feeling is that if you're doing a thing like that and you know that it's not what a lot of people think it is, then you kind of have a responsibility to explain. Like, if you don't think magic is what a lot of people think of as magic, you have a responsibility to explain that you don't think it's anything like that. It's not lightning bolts from your fingertips or even curses if you don't believe in that kind of stuff, right?
Right, right.
And if you're not explaining that and you're taking advantage of the misapprehensions about it, then I don't know. I'm wandering off on a tangent.
Yeah, they may just be having fun with the foolish reactions to what they do.
It seems the more that they're honest about what it is that they're actually into, the less there's any point to it.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Well, are you done with that?
Yes,
with
that I am.
That's all right.
It. So we got one group of idiots throwing up a imaginary protective shield against what another group of idiots believe they're doing.
Right.
Ay, ay, ay. Steve from the UK writes, sorry to be pedantic, but a comment
but.
You can apologize for a thing you're about to do that you think is necessary but unfortunate. Of course you may. Sorry to be pedantic, but a comment was made on the 15th January episode. I'm sure I'm paraphrasing, but someone roughly said that the Nazis did not go for a violent takeover on day one, but worked their way to power incrementally.
Mm.
I believe you're forgetting that before they came to any sense of power, they first tried a coup, the so-called beer hall putsch. The first attempt at power was an attempted violent takeover. It was only after that failed coup that Hitler sat in jail writing Mein Kampf and tried a new strategy. Pedantic point, I know. Sorry.
So well, opening, that's valuable.
Opening and closing with an apology. Well, he is, of course, historically accurate.
Yes.
That's correct. However, I'll be pedantic and point out that the Nazi party existed for some time before the beer hall putsch. So it was still not day one.
I'll make
I will also point out that, you know, the modern Nazis, when they do shit like have big meetings and do the Nazi salute and say Heil Trump, for example, right? We are talking about a continuation of the same thing.
Yeah.
So, okay, right. That just tells us that in their past, these people, this group, has attempted violent overthrows.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're not doing it now, you still know who they are.
Right. And what results you're likely to get.
But yeah, Steve, you are of course correct. I think, and I think that was me, and I'll take my lumps for being historical.
Of course, then again, it is
historically inaccurate.
Yeah, yeah. If we consider, you know, the Nazi Party as a continuance, now they have Mein Kampf as they did back then, and they can proceed. Yeah.
Yes. Although, actually, technically, you're not being pedantic; you're being nitpicky.
Wow, I feel like we should have some sort of like crown or scepter of power or something that passes around the table to whoever just said the most awesome
thing. And I want to make sure that's NIT as in NIT, not KNIT.
Oh, yes, of course.
I want to make sure everyone understands that.
All right. So it's like that this episode, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Russell?
Oh, damn it.
It's all that.
So,
are you casting a curse?
Damn you all to hell. I'm going to come clean here. I've been working real late for the last couple of weeks, and I left work just in time to get here. And so I didn't have a good amount of time to cull a bunch of news, although there's some good stuff, and I want to say that I'm constantly grateful to our listeners for filling in the blanks, especially Lieb Hicks right now, who brought up an old subject that's near and dear to our heart, which is the Ark Park.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How is it doing?
It's not making money. Well, strike that. It's making money probably for Ken Ham and the church.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, the problem is that Ken Ham kind of promised that it was going to make money for the state of Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And did he sign a thing that makes him liable at all if it doesn't?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Why would he? That would require ethics.
Let's see.
Well, it's simple due diligence on the part of the state of Kentucky.
You would think.
To make sure that he will be held accountable if his pie-in-the-sky claims do not bear fruit.
Yeah. No, that never happens.
Okay.
We're talking about religion.
That's right.
Ham said the Ark hosted 500,000 visitors in the 6 months it was open in 2016. A staffer said about 645,000 guests have visited the 510-foot replica of Noah's Ark. Ham called the Ark a success, but its success has not quite had the ripple effect that many in Grant County expected. It's been a great thing, but it's not brought us any money, said Grant County Judge Executive Steve Wood during a break from a budget meeting. The county is teetering on bankruptcy and trying to balance the budget. Wood said they were to the point where jobs may have to be cut. He will propose a 2% payroll tax at next week's fiscal court meeting. He blames prior fiscal courts for the budget crisis, not the Ark. But he said the Ark hadn't lived up to its promise.
So here's what I recommend. The county should take out loans to pay all their bills. And then when they go underwater on those loans, then they should take two of their employees, or two of each kind of employee, build a giant boat and float them away to a new county.
Sure.
Where they can begin anew.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad because people like us were sounding the alarm that this was a really stupid waste of time and money and
Well, to be fair,
tax dollars.
To be fair, we did not know that it wouldn't make any money, right? I have to admit to being a bit surprised that the county is getting nothing. Absolutely nothing. Well, so the alarm we sounded was just a general sort of, you can't do that because it's in violation of, like, you know, the separation of church and state.
Right.
That was that, let's be fair about what we warned them about. And that's, you know, because it could have made them a ton of money, I suppose, you know, if we were living in a completely different universe.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're living in a universe where, like, God's Not Dead did very well because it was cheap to produce. And lots of people saw it because they felt like that particular kind of bullshit was speaking directly to them in a way that most movies don't.
But now the sequels have not made nearly that kind of money.
Oh, that's right. We looked that up, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. God's Not Dead 2 didn't do all that well. Okay.
See, now we there needs to be a film company that makes the movie God's Undead.
Yeah.
And then that would be
That could be all about Jesus, right?
As a reminder,
It would be a poignant, uplifting horror movie.
As a reminder, Grant County gave Ken Ham a $74 million land grant for the park.
Wow.
And so I feel like they may not be blaming the Ark Park people for their budget shortfall. But I mean
– Well, it sounds like they're blaming their predecessors.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what kind of universe we are living in? We're living in a universe where 37 light years from here, scientists have detected a star system – the super cool red dwarf orbited by seven, count them, seven Earth-like planets.
Earth-sized planets. And
yeah,
and,
but they're believed to be rocky planets, right?
Yeah, so
they're Earth-like
yeah.
In that in that sense. And three of them in the habitable zone, and potentially another one
Goldilocks zone
that could still be habitable despite being outside that zone for other reasons. Cool, huh?
Yeah,
very cool.
Just science.
It'll take
news.
Us a while to get there, but we're working on it.
Just 37 years at the speed of light. what I think is cool is I want to throw in some more science space news is Elon Musk announcing that they're going to fly a couple of private citizens round the moon.
Yeah, I heard something about that. What's going on there?
They're like in two years or something, or is it next year? It's just an incredibly short timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And for a price comparable to these visits to the International Space Station.
Wow.
It just means that, you know, our technology is starting to get to the point where this stuff starts happening, right?
And, yeah.
You know, it used to be that airplane trips were just for the ultra rich. And now it's getting to be where space travel is so far only for the ultra rich.
Right.
But it's a move in the right direction. We got to get past the it's only for the rich phase in order to get to the it's for other people phase.
Yeah. Going around the moon is significantly different from just orbiting the Earth.
Yeah.
You can always get down from orbit, you know.
And these guys are going
to – boy, when you're halfway to the moon,
my understanding is that the passengers will have no – there will not be any other crew.
Right.
They're just sending the passengers. And the capsule will be remotely piloted.
Wow. That's impressive.
That's
we'll see.
And we think, how much money did how many millions of dollars worth of land did they give Ken Ham, trusting that he would use it properly? These people are giving millions and millions of dollars to Elon Musk, trusting that he will get them home safely. Whew. Still,
be cool.
Crazy as it is, when the crazy is the tip of an iceberg. Sometimes to not crazy, right? When the thing becomes, when the technology becomes more established and advanced, then things that seem crazy now will be less crazy later. Flying across the Atlantic used to be, you know, this mad scheme. It was a giant stunt that made all the newspapers.
Not anymore.
So, we've previously covered Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So we got Mars as a destination right here in our own solar system.
Yeah.
And then we got Proxima B as a destination just like 3 light years away. And now we got this system. By the time that we have the capability to send vessels those kinds of distances.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have hundreds, I would imagine, hundreds of potential destinations scoped out.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing. But right now,
a lot of planets out
there. There's kind of a natural progression from one to the next. Not that we can do any of them quite yet.
Right.
Right. Mars is just about there.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Cool, man. Very cool. As long as religion does not drag us back to the Stone Ages.
Yep. Which it is wont to do.
One of the reasons why we do this show is to fight that.
Yep.
And encourage folks to do likewise. Whose turn is it? Is it me again?
Yeah. I think so. Read another letter.
Yeah.
I do. Derek from South Carolina says, last show, you guys were talking about the idea that Christians have about creating artificial life. Yeah, and we had a little discussion about, you know, would that prove that life is just a physical process because we can make some in a lab? Would they latch on to the fact that we can make some in a lab and say, see, it can be made.
Right.
Therefore, God did it.
Yeah. Tails I win, heads you lose. Yeah.
Derek says, I thought this was a fascinating discussion, and it gave me an idea for a question.
Uh-huh.
So Derek is usurping
he's
your
offering me a question. Very well.
Or he's just usurping it for himself. Right. It's his question. If we are able to create life, does this mean that we are forcing God to attribute a soul to that new life?
Ooh,
see, now that's
that is
actually
a good question.
That's like underlying a lot of horror fiction.
Yeah.
Is the idea that if you made a thing, it wouldn't have a soul because it was made by man and not by an imaginary space pixie.
Right.
And therefore it would necessarily be evil. Huh. And even now, you know, the modern day, like, you know, it's a robot, therefore it wants to kill us all. Stories
all right, yeah. So
are still tapping into that presumption that somehow it's not possible to make a thing that's friendly.
Yeah, and also that's a dumb argument in the other direction, because as far as I know, all the people who have been evil had just as much soul as any other person.
That's right.
I mean, you can interpret that however you want,
but if people
have souls,
but,
then
– Yeah, but you know, like
– It doesn't make you nice.
It's sort of the tip of an argument by believers to justify killing certain people, right, hating them to death. It's because they are soulless and therefore you can do whatever you want to them because they're just a hunk of meat. So that's why
people made by the God process that don't have souls?
I think that's what they're saying. I don't
know. Why would the God do that?
Maybe somebody out there who comes from a place where their religious relatives have discussed this in more detail. But
God seems like a real jackass.
This is disturbing because
people are accused of being soulless. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know how that works.
Right. Well, they're attributing this magical, undetectable property to people, but then they're also arbitrarily saying that some people don't have it, and the people who don't have it are, acceptable targets.
Yeah.
Right. Sure.
And so
zombies.
You know, do we have a reliable soul detector, or can you just go around saying like
what we have is a convenient soul labeling process?
Yeah,
that is usable to put that label on anything you want to be justified in killing.
Yep.
By the way, I'm not going there. Never mind.
It's like Sneetches. Right?
It's Sneetches?
I mean, you either have a star or you don't, and depending on your arbitrary frame of reference,
that's just standard garden variety bigotry.
Right.
Right. And at no point did the Sneetches that did have stars look at the Sneetches without them and say, you know, unclean, and then pull out their machine guns and blow them down.
But then again, the star is an actual visible manifestation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, the soul is this nebulous thing that no one can detect. Great. Awesome.
Yeah, but the guy had a machine, see? it is a good question, Derek, and it
– It is.
I've heard it before, though, when the question was not something we created in a lab, but – the early humans. At what point
did they get souls?
At what point did the pre-hominid creatures become things with souls? If the Catholic Church is going to insist that they've got them.
And what changes in behavior did that cause?
Only an issue if you believe the lie of evolution.
That's true.
Or does simply everything have a soul? Animists would say they kind of do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then that means man-made life also has a soul.
Right. If we were looking for a bullshit excuse, we might latch onto that one.
That seems like a cop out. I mean, does my toaster have a soul?
If my laptop has a soul, can now blame it for things that it does.
Oh, well, that's handy.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That is
punish
handy
it for it.
And indeed, I can punish
Although,
it.
Although, to be fair,
however, I'll probably wreck it then. That's no good.
The lack of a soul doesn't stop me from blaming my laptop for stuff.
That's right.
You should still, instead of blaming it and going for punishment. You should recognize that it is the source of the problem and go for where you make them not do it anymore.
No, what I should do is if my laptop has a soul and it does something I don't like, I should call customer support and say, the soul in your damn machine is screwing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll love that.
They have that too. It's called prayer.
Quick solution. Pray.
Yes, what is the opposite of recidivism? Have you tried turning it off and on again?
What is the opposite of recidivism? Where somebody does stop doing bad things.
Reform?
Insanity? You keep doing the same thing? I don't know.
maybe reform is the word I'm looking for. That's what you should be going for with your laptop.
Okay.
Try to reform it rather than...
Right, right.
Exorcise it.
Read some Latin from an old book. Yeah.
Derek's letter goes on. What would it mean for the power of their God if we are able to overtake his ability to create new life and steal souls without his consent? Well, if he set up a process whereby anything that's alive and thinks gets a soul automatically because the process is in place, then are we stealing a soul when we make a thinking being, or are we just taking part in the process that he set up and he meant it that way all along?
As a designer of massively multiplayer games, I mean, if the rules allow it, we can, I guess we could be called griefers
is it an exploit? It's not griefers. It's an exploit. No, griefing is when you're screwing with other players.
Right. You're trying to ruin everybody's day. Within the bounds of the rules.
You're not ruining everybody's day if you just make an intelligent person. You're doing an exploit if you're getting the soul into it that you weren't meant to have.
Yeah. Cool.
Can you get banned for that?
Well,
they probably believe
so. Depends what you mean.
sure.
Apparently you can, but it doesn't happen until your character dies.
That's right.
They can't actually get you out of the game until your character dies. Then your character goes to the bad place and
permadeath
and can't come back.
Yeah.
Why can't there be a medium place?
Yeah. You die, your body goes ragdoll physics, and you're gone.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Derek. It was
that
was a fun little discussion.
I have here an opinion piece which was brought up by you, Jeff, originally.
Yeah.
It's not that old, although it's covering a topic which I feel like we've been talking about a lot. I've been talking about a lot, and it's not necessarily new stuff, and it's from religiondispatches.org, which I don't know the general tone of the site.
It's an opinion piece.
It's an opinion piece by Christopher Douglas.
It could be not accurate.
A week ago.
Yeah.
First thing he does is recap Pizzagate, which is, briefly some cranks told each other that Hillary Clinton was running a child sex ring out of a pizza parlor. And then some guy took it so seriously that he went and scared everybody off with a gun and shot a hole in the floor and failed to find the underground tunnels.
Right.
Mentions that the story seems to have begun on 4chan and then spread through news aggregation websites and social media. So he goes on, as we moved from an election dominated by fake news to a new Trump administration run on the principle of, quote, alternative facts, it's worth taking some time to ponder that what seems to be contemporary conservative credulity. We should certainly be reminded of the term truthiness that Stephen Colbert invented in 2005 to capture some of the pronouncements of the Bush administration. Truthiness is certainly an ancestor of fake news and alternative facts, and the way fake news tends to get better reception among conservatives and liberals even by a 2-to-1 margin, and there are various links to these things, has also been recognized. One fake news creator was interviewed and explained, we tried to do similar things to liberals, meaning, you know, make a lot of money getting clicks from news that was straight up made up. And it never worked. It never takes off. You get debunked within the first two comments and the whole thing kind of fizzles out. What is
what he's trying to say is what I got from that article is drawing a connection between and you haven't really touched on it.
I was next paragraph.
All right, go ahead. Why don't you do that before I
The right wing might have or like the credulity of the right wing might have to do with the religious roots of today's Republican Party in the Christian right. Beginning with the Moral Majority, founded in 1979 by Jerry Falwell and Tim LaHaye, and continuing through church organizations such as Pat Robertson's Christian Coalition and James Dobson's Focus on the Family, conservative Christians have helped reshape the Republican Party and its policies. Its family values positions on abortion, the sexual revolution, gender roles, pornography, and homosexuality have been heavily influenced by its conservative Christian theology. Voters have continued to sort themselves over the last few decades as political liberals became less religious and political conservatives more religious. Why don't you go ahead
you still haven't quite drilled down to the core of his argument. What he's trying to do is draw imply that susceptibility to fake news is a trait that has a lot to do with being religious. That's why he's talking here about the Republicans are way more religious than the Democrats. The thing is, what we need to be careful about is that there are other kinds of susceptibility to false claims than just religion.
Of course.
But that doesn't mean he's necessarily wrong, right? And that's why he's invoking these statistical differences in what the parties are mostly made up of, and B, in how they react differently to attempts at fake news.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there are also other differences between Republicans and Democrats than religiosity, right?
Sure.
There's education level, and that's connected with religiosity, but it's hard to say for sure that which of those two connected things might be more of a cause.
Right.
Well, I mean, my take on it is that there's a certain kind of insularity that religion encourages and fosters, which is basically that, you know, how many times have you had an argument with a religious person and you argued into a dead end and they basically said, well, you know, that this has just strengthened my faith, you know, and it becomes, you know, they'll beat you with facts if they can manage it. And I'm not saying all atheists are the most brilliant arguers in the world. But if you get to the point where the argument can't progress any further through reasonable points, they will pull out their trump card, which is, you know, well, this is maybe a test of my faith, or, you know, my understanding is not at the same as this infinite guy who told me.
Right. Or the other favorite, which is, you know, what I am saying really does magically make sense. Mm-hmm. And you just can't see it because you don't have the same religious assumptions that I do.
Right. You're not you're still in Plato's cave or something like that.
They're not going to say it that way.
No,
no. But
Yeah. Yeah. No. So let's move on with this discussion though. Right. So the author of the article points out that you know, religious institution, right wing conservative religious institutions are all about getting people to believe stuff because they are told,
right, without looking
at it, without looking at it critically, and to argue by resorting to whatever they can point to, whether it has any evidentiary basis behind it or not. And those points, I think, are all very well taken, right? That totally is a set of traits that one can learn or get used to employing that are similar between religion and vulnerability to fake news.
Yeah,
it's the thing that's missing, the one piece that's missing, and I hope that if there is anything to this, I hope that this further research is done, is what about the fact that while religions, conservative religion is all about getting people to think that way, it's all with the caveat of if it says so in the Bible, or if we all understand that as it being part of our religion, if some website you've never heard of that claims to be news just says it.
Okay, but I mean, it's not necessarily restricted to believing in the Bible. I feel like my diagnosis of the mindset is that you reach a certain set of conclusions, and then you have this enormous resistance to any kind of cognitive dissonance that would change your mind.
Right.
So like modern Christians' ideas about hell don't really mostly come from the Bible, which has a few very vague things to say about a lake of fire.
But there is a shared body of beliefs that
There's like a bunch of established literature, like John Milton and Dante, and some apocalyptic literature written in the 19th century that have sort of culturally informed Christians about what hell is like, and they would insist it's in the Bible if you press them on it, but it isn't.
Right.
But it's coming to these early conclusions about what information is true and unshakable. And, if someone gets it in their head that like WorldNet Daily is one of those sources, then, it's not
They're
so much about
believe it.
Why they believe it. It's just that's been added to their list of things they can't question.
Yeah, but I don't think that more research needs to be done. Yeah. The impression I've got is not that that conservative Christians are adding specific fake news sources to their list of things they will trust.
Not on purpose.
In any kind of explicit way.
Yeah.
It is more that, and I think this is the point made in the article, that they're merely believing anything that feeds their biases.
Right. And the religious, are not encouraged to think critically about anything.
Right. Nor are, as he points out in his article, nor are liberals immune to claims that fit their biases.
Whoops.
So anyway, in the end, I think this is an article which spells out a suspicion that a lot of us have had for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And attempts to build a case. And more work needs to be done to determine whether this is really a thing.
Okay.
Certainly.
All right. Thank you, Russell, for
okay.
for reading that. Michael from Virginia writes, I heard Jeff mention this week that Liberty University forbids interracial dating. I think you might be confusing Liberty and with Bob Jones University, which didn't allow interracial dating for about 30 years until they finally began allowing non-white people to attend there. As I understand it, the school ended that ban about 17 years ago. You are absolutely right, Michael. I went and looked it up. And in the course of looking it up, not only did I find that they ended the policy about 17 years ago, they ended 17 years ago, but the IRS was on their case, saying they should not be, tax exempt because of their, racism. Right. Presumably in violation of federal rules about universities and what you can do.
Right.
To which Pat Robertson responded. This is an old story. Old story from Pat Robertson from 2 years ago. This came out right after the IRS conclusion came down, which is interesting because that would mean that the IRS took away Bobby Jones University's tax exempt status 15 years after they had stopped doing this particular thing. Robertson said it was chilling to think that the government could punish Christian schools for opposing same-sex marriage. He suggested, quote, Bob Jones merely said in their statement of faith that they didn't believe that the Bible supported interracial marriage and interracial activity. Interracial activity. Yes, I also was wondering about what was meant by that word. I mean, sitting on a bus together in equally valid kind of seats
maybe
would be an activity.
Using the same water fountains?
Yeah, that's a kind of activity.
Yeah.
So who knows? Now, that was their belief. Actually, it's not supported by the Bible. What the Bible's talking about is relationships between believers and non-believers, Jews and non-Jews, not black and white. See, it's not racism. Because it's between Jews and non-Jews,
right.
And not against between white people and black people. That's why it's not racism.
Oh, I see.
But also,
Jew is not a race.
But also, check out, it's an ethnic group, right?
Yeah.
Falls under the broad umbrella of racism. If you're going to be against Jewish people,
I think
you really want to have a problem with this. Okay, fine.
I don't have a problem with it, but I also think that even if they were not an ethnic group, but a broadly defined group of people,
can we just say bigotry?
Yeah.
It's bigotry.
Sure. Yeah,
bigotry.
Stick with bigotry.
Okay, fine. Well, Robertson certainly is, but before we're too dazzled by his sleight of hand.
We're not.
Saying it's not that kind of bigotry because it's this other kind of bigotry,
right.
And therefore it's okay. He also said that was their belief that it's not supported by the Bible. He's saying Bob Jones University was wrong in their interpretation of the Bible.
Is he?
Yes.
All right.
That was their belief. It's actually not supported by the Bible. Right? And yet, he's arguing the government must stand out of the way and allow Bob Jones University to continue this bigoted policy because – not because the Bible actually says so, but because they say – they believe that's what the Bible says.
Right.
In other words, if you say the activity you are doing is biblical
–
then the government must let you do it.
Right. No matter what it is.
Well, I say,
which is astonishing.
I say casting Wiccan curses on Donald Trump is from the Bible.
It's biblical because
I said so. Yeah.
The Bible says that that's a thing.
Yep.
Yeah. It also says don't suffer them to live.
Right.
No, I believe that is a misunderstanding of that particular passage. When the Bible says, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live," what they're saying is that witchcraft is a very unhappy, stressful lifestyle, and it's beholden upon the rest of us to try to make the rest of their lives as free of suffering as possible.
Well, hopefully they've got some fighters standing in front of them.
So you should, if you find a Wiccan, what
just
you do
full
is
of callbacks
make a,
today.
Get them a right. Get them a comfy pillow and a nice warm cup of tea, and put on some video they like, and go do their chores for them. Not their Wiccan chores, of course, because those would be sinful. But you're not supposed to suffer them to live. Not supposed to suffer him to live. You understand?
Long as they're happy.
Thank you, Pat.
It's cool.
All right. So, yeah. More crazy religion.
Yeah.
Okay.
What up?
All right.
Is there more news?
Well, I mean, it's about that time.
Oh, it's time for
nothing? Unfortunately, I do not... I can never remember how I'm supposed to contact our new producer, Vern.
To let them know that you're about to do the thing?
Yeah, which is why I'm dragging this out, but I'm about to do the thing.
I could hear them a moment ago, like, talking through the walls. They may not even be paying attention.
Well, I hope they are. Otherwise, I'll just be shouting like an idiot.
They'll do the echo in post, man.
Yeah. And the thing I'll shout is, shit, internet apologists say.
Wow.
They're on top of things. It's great.
That's quite a different echo, too.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Cool.
And try as we might, we just cannot throw those guys off. They are on top of it.
They have their finger on the switch.
Oh, come on.
Well done, gentlemen.
Yes. Of course, we ruin the effect by discussing to death the mechanics of it.
Of course.
Thank you.
Mark has come out and done a bow. Thank you, Mark.
So what are
internet apologists saying?
We got some education stuff this week. And according to my notes from olden times, Dennis actually submitted this like 2 months ago.
Me?
3 months ago. Yeah, I'm not surprised you don't remember. It's been on my backlog.
Oh, okay.
And it's still valid today.
Yep. And the particular issue here is not one of the usual subjects about math. It's about education. Shit, spoiler.
Yeah.
The title of this, Why Math Isn't Religiously Neutral.
No, of course not. Mathematics is the devil's plaything.
No, yeah. I just want to linger on this detail a little bit. The website in question is homeschoolenrichment.com. And the subtitle here by a fellow named Israel Wayne is Secular Worldviews Can't Make Sense of Math. Christianity Does.
Oh, boy.
That gives you a little preview. Yeah.
Yeah.
He launches with something that I hate apologists doing, which is telling a stupid little apocryphal story.
Oh, awesome.
To illustrate the thing. I mean,
go ahead. Yeah. Let me know where he's coming from. Come on.
Good morning, class. It's time for us to study mathematics. The second grade students all open their textbooks and pick up their pencils.
Good morning, teacher.
Let's review first. Who can answer? What is 2 + 4? 7-year-old Johnny raises his hand. It's always Johnny, isn't it?
It is.
And offers an answer. 6? Very good, Johnny, responds his government school teacher. That's correct.
Oh, God.
That's correct. Fully expecting to go on to the next question, the teacher looks back at her teacher's manual. I can't take any more of this story. This is like a stream of consciousness improvised scene that doesn't have any jokes in it.
What's he saying?
But then the teacher is like, one of the kids asks, why does 2 + 4 = 6? And the teacher is like, I don't know, because it's not in the teacher's manual.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah. The teacher has just found herself in a tight spot. Like it or not, she's facing a question that, by state law, she is not permitted to answer honestly.
What?
She quickly thinks through her list of options, and then the story just keeps going, for fuck's sake.
She can't answer that God made it so.
Yeah. We don't know why, Johnny. That's just the way it is. We don't understand it. Blah, blah, blah. Finally, she decides to answer according to the meta-narrative of the government. Oh, and he has to explain what meta-narrative means. Oh, God. Of the government school system. What most teachers spread out over 14 billion years ago, she begins. What? This has nothing to do with math.
Right.
Oh, my God. This whole thing is an anecdote. Oh, okay. No, eventually it ends after the teacher has rambled for a really long time with the Christian straw man version of what evolution and the Big Bang and everything are.
Oh, how tiresome.
Because when you're asked why does 2 + 4 = 6, the thing you do is go back to the creation of the universe.
Yeah.
I guess.
Sure.
I mean, if these were accurate anecdotes of the way anybody ever talks.
Yeah. I can give them a better argument than that.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Okay. Where does math come from?
The reason math is – well, the reason math is evil, it's not of God. It's because if you know it – if you have some apples and somebody gives you some more apples and you can say – before that person gives you more apples, if you can say how many you'll have, that's prophecy, and that's the realm of God.
Oh.
So addition is prophecy.
Okay, but the
which is evil.
But the apologist's question is, where does math come from?
Right.
Or rather, the rhetorical question.
It must
because,
come
of course,
of the devil.
They believe math.
No, they're not against. They're not taking a stand against math here.
They're taking a stand against secular math.
Right.
Because, whatever that means. Because it's not a rhetorical question. It's a because they believe they already. Or, I'm sorry, it is rhetorical because they believe they already know the answer, which is that God made it up. Which is ridiculous, because they have invented a source of everything, and they believe that the answer to every question of where did X come from is their source of everything, without having ever demonstrated that that particular thing exists.
Right.
Things might have a lot of different sources.
Yeah. This is a dumbed down version of the already pretty dumb, what do you call that? The Saiten Bruggenkate style argument. Man, it's been so long since I've heard anybody try that bullshit that I've forgotten the special name that they gave it.
Right. Presuppositionalism.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wow.
Presuppositional apologetics.
I had my own trouble remembering words today.
So. Yeah.
So this is a primer for that, I guess.
Right.
Ugh. So,
so here's another howler.
Wait a minute. I want to respond to something else, because this person has got the math teacher going off into cosmology.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmology does not belong in math class any more than
evolution belongs in math
class. Evolution belongs in math class. There we have different classes for different subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this guy is not going to embrace that, because that is part of the argument for why religion doesn't belong in any of those other classes that is talking about any of those other things.
Yeah.
Now, if he thinks that it is okay for religion to be in all the classes, then he should have to be okay with cosmology or evolution being in all the other classes, except that he doesn't like
evolution. Well, he's going to make the argument that it's got to be one or the other, inevitably.
He has rejected the notion that classes are about specific kinds of things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think that opens him up to some.
Yeah. Now, I mean, he's making he's now sort of hedging with excuses about why that story mathematics sounded so crappy.
I'm going to use Dennis's $5 word from earlier in the show. Mathematics is descriptive, not prescriptive.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And so why does math work? Because it is a model that we use that follows the way we have observed things to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is not that things have to be the way they are because of math.
Right.
That's backward.
Yeah.
And so in a God-created universe, as long as it's a universe that has a particular set of behaviors with regard to amounts and things, right? Then math should be just exactly as valid in that God-created universe as in a naturalistic universe, because it's describing how the universe behaves. Now, he's got the further hurdle, which is that I don't think I'm going out on a limb here when I make the assumption that he believes in miracles. So he believes math can be violated by magic, whereas we don't.
Interesting.
But he's not going there.
No, of course not.
That's why he's focusing on where did it come from. But it's not the point of like high school math classes to go into the question of where did math come from. And it's enough and nonpartisan to say math is a system humans have come up with to describe the way we see things behaving.
Right.
So the conflict that he is whooping up doesn't even exist, except that he wants it to.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm done.
He says, if this sounds over the top to you, it's simply because I didn't subtly dish it out piecemeal over 12 years. But that's how all education really is, apparently, is what he's getting at. If you were to ask a teacher who is committed to the official narrative of government education, who is the author of mathematics, they would respond that it is evolution or time plus matter plus chance.
What?
Oh,
Evolution did not write down the rules of mathematics. Yeah. That was human beings.
At no point.
Good grief.
Okay.
Okay, so
we can't have human beings writing things down because obviously we're religious lunatics, and therefore everything that is of any value whatsoever was written down by the god. And if somebody else did it, then we still give credit to the god, and that person was just inspired. Why this jackhole is not willing to just follow the standard apologetics route and say, yeah, well, those mathematicians were all inspired by God, therefore God gets credit at the end. Why he won't do that, who knows?
Because he's because he's on homeschoolenrichment.com.
Oh, that would do it.
And he's railing against the competition, which is the government teachers.
His brand has to be better than their brand.
As snide as he wants to be.
Right. Yeah. But we have a solution to this question coming up. Would you like to know where math came from?
Where did it come from?
Okay, I hope you're sitting down and can withstand the show. Jesus is the author of math.
Oh, awesome.
What? Jesus is.
Yeah.
The author of math. Uh-huh. But I thought his objection was going to be
the Egyptian built those pyramids without any math whatsoever.
Yeah, I thought the objection was that math had to have existed since the dawn of time and it wasn't evolution or cosmology, therefore it was God. Is he gonna be playing the Jesus is really eternal and has always existed card? I guess he must.
Well, yeah, of course he is.
Okay, all right, go on. Go on.
This is another truth claim that we must consider. This is the Christian worldview as it applies to mathematics. Speaking to the Lord of the Lord Jesus Christ, the Apostle Paul says, Bible, 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 Bible. Colossians 1:15.
Oh, you're not
going
to read the quote?
You want me to read the quote?
Yeah,
I'll read the quote.
We're in this far.
He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature. For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers.
Right.
All things were created by him and for him, and he is before all things, and by him all things consist.
And math is invisible. Right.
To three shalt thou count.
So if
the
Jesus
number of thy counting shall be three.
Is Jesus is just the image of God, right?
Yeah.
That's like Jesus is God's avatar. God is a variable, and that's been filled in by the value Jesus.
Sure. What is the domain and range of that?
I don't know.
All right. Well.
Well, it is the Alpha and the Omega. So
once again, he just goes straight back to.
He said anything about the Epsilon?
He's just gone straight back to the invisible friend invented everything, therefore everything. Everything you want to know where it's from, it's from that. The end.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it.
I mean, it's just like I was saying. I mean, you take some vague, non-specific, and sort of braggy things from the Bible, and you project onto them the sort of cultural context nonsense that you get from wherever you're coming from, the homeschooling movement in this case,
right?
And backed up by all this, fundamentalist tradition. And then you get to 100% certainty that whatever you think is right and all the people who aren't saying what you say are enemies of truth and reality.
Is that the end?
Maintain.
Hell no.
Well, is it the end of your segment?
Do you want me to be done? Okay.
It's up to you, man. Do you got more to say?
Let's see. I'm skipping ahead. Anyone can teach that 2 + 4 = 6, but only a born-again Christian can accurately teach why. The existence of mathematics is one of the strongest evidences for the existence of God.
Oh, good grief. Accurately. And how does he know that it's accurate? It's because he has decided that the Bible is inerrant and it said a thing.
I'll just read the last sentence.
Okay.
I hope that you will teach your children to look for the attributes of God in every subject area that he created, including math. May it lead you to a greater awe, admiration, gratitude, and worship.
Sorry, they're all looking for the force in everything. Yeah.
Why do I get the feeling that the reason the focus of this story was the 2 + 4 = 6 question Because there are very few Christian homeschoolers who can get their mind around like trigonometry or calculus.
I don't know.
Well, he could have used anything. It's all right for him to use a simple example of a piece of math.
Uh-huh.
That's not unfair. Thank you, Russell.
I have
an issue.
All right. What is thine issue?
There's something deeply unfair about our show.
Aww.
Okay. I'll explain. Don't feel sorry for me. Don't feel sorry for me until I've made my case, all right?
And then
if you think
pants?
I'm full of shit that you don't have to. You don't have to wear pants.
Oh, okay.
If you just haven't tried.
That would be deeply unfair.
But once it's been established, you don't have to wear pants. I think it didn't. In fairness, neither do Russell or I, and then we're down a slippery slope. Too. The audience doesn't have to wear pants, and then no, that's not the thing.
Luckily, our whole audience is wearing pants right now.
Yeah. So somebody who listens to our show and doesn't like it, Somebody who listens to our show and doesn't like it can simply stop listening.
That's right? True. Yeah.
Problem solved.
That's true.
Right? And yet, we can't stop people who don't like our show from sending us angry emails about what they don't like.
This we, is, can this is an invalid, we can stop reading
them. We can stop reading them.
We can do that, right? But we can't actually – without stopping the show, we can't stop being a place where these kinds of emails right. get sent. Yeah. That is an imbalance in power, I think.
Okay.
Well, and it's not like we can
solution is
do
obvious. Hit squats.
Yeah.
No, we don't even know. Half of these people don't use real names in their emails anyway. And we have a policy of keeping them secret. So this is leading into we got some angry emails.
Oh, cool.
Oh, no.
Now, we're not
going to
talk about punching Nazis again. But other than this, okay, I think if you're listening to our show, please understand this. We're going to spend significant portions of, I would say, at least two episodes on any meaty topic.
Controversial issue. Yeah.
Because we're going to – well, the first episode of that is going to be us going over it and trying to cover it in the amount of depth that we think it deserves. And then the next episode will be us responding to emails from people right. who have responded on that. If we didn't think the subject was important in the first place, we wouldn't have brought it up. If we do, we are prepared to do at least two episodes on it. Three, if you insist on sending us a bunch more emails, keeping it going. Now, I'm not going to actually read any right. of the emails that we have gotten after the second episode of this. Partly because it's our damn show, but mostly because, gotta tell you, guys, we did not receive any emails that tread any new ground
right.
on the subject. We did not get any new arguments, and we did not get any new analysis of our statements that bears a moment's consideration. And then, right. you know, of course, I'm in an unfair position here passing that judgment. But really, you know, the reason we do the second episode on the subject is to give our listeners a chance to chime in.
Yeah.
Right? We really do care what you say. But if you just keep saying the same things over and over again, if you just keep repeating things we've already responded to or ignoring things that we've said.
Yeah.
There's nothing new there. There's nothing more to discuss.
You are right. going to say so, what topic we're talking about.
Yeah, we did.
Right?
We're Nazi punching.
Right? Oh,
I said that at the top,
yeah.
right?
Hey, all I'll right. talk about that some more if I.
Sure. Should we serve Nazis with punch?
We got a bunch of emails that basically boil down to no, because I just because straw men versions of what we said.
Sure.
It's like, come on. If we do that, if we respond to that, we'll be here forever on every single subject, right? Going, no, right. you didn't. That is not what we said. What we said was non sequiturs.
Uh-huh.
You know what those are, and things we've already addressed. So anyway, enough already. I'm sorry that you had, if you didn't like the topic, I'm sorry that you had to hear two episodes of it, but that's the way our show is going to be because we don't have callers. We can't respond to people immediately. And to give people a fair chance to chime in, we got to do it at least a second time.
Yeah.
So furthermore, you know, if your response is you got to limit the one listener wrote in, I won't give a name because it's not relevant. You must limit all segments to 15 minutes tops. I'm sorry. We do value our listeners. Okay. And we depend on listeners to make this show a bit more interesting, because otherwise it would just be three of us
talking. Interesting.
Yeah.
We try, but come on, right? And to be fair and to let people chime in on things we've talked about, it's perfectly reasonable. We do value our listeners and their feedback, but the show is not a democracy.
Yeah.
Okay. That we depend on you guys, but that does not extend to you tell us the rules we will abide by. We listen and we may make adjustments, but we are never going to come out and say, we made this change to our show because X number of people said so, because then we've just turned the show into a thing where, like, you guys just tell us what to do. And that's not what we're here for. Go get somebody else to do what you tell them to do.
We get a lot of feedback. Not only are we opinionated about how to run the show, but, like, all these suggestions about guiding the show via unbreakable rules is ridiculous. Like, why would we impose, you know, if we don't think it's a good idea to to pick another example on the Atheist Experience, set a hard time limit for a particular caller and never go over that amount of time, why would just saying that we have a rule from now on accomplish that? I mean, you know, if we wanted to limit the time, then we would just hang up on the caller because we feel like it. And if we wanted to terminate a discussion after exactly 15 minutes of exactly one episode, we'd be doing that.
Yeah. And yeah, we love y'all. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will continue to listen. But it's not the kind of show where you dictate to us what we're going to do. Neither is this the show for people who think that jackasses like this Milo character are deserving of a moment of special consideration.
I got a tweet about that.
Okay. I was astonished, and I have to say deeply dismayed, that we got several emails from people defending this idiot.
Wow.
In spite of the fact that out there in the real world, right?
Yeah.
Like, the GOP has kicked his ass to the ground. Breitbart kicked his ass to the ground. Right.
Yeah.
His publisher has kicked him out. Everybody in the universe seems to have caught on that this guy is a worthless piece of scum.
Yeah.
Except for some of our listeners, which is extremely disappointing. Extremely disappointing. One listener in particular, whose name I will not mention because I don't care to, it went so far as to suggest that that we're like bigoted against him and complained that we had called him a white supremacist.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, you know, that may be not technically correct, but you can add that to the list of a zillion other things we say on this show in our stream of consciousness show, where we don't have special rules about how to do things, but just try to do a good job and have fun doing it. And having fun doing it is one of the reasons we don't have rigid rules like that. But if you think there is a significant difference between being an openly avowed white supremacist, which the Milo idiot apparently isn't, and being a sympathizer for white supremacists, which he absolutely is, because Breitbart is a nest of white supremacists and he hung out there.
Yeah.
Right? And is part of that whole crowd. If you think that's a significant enough difference that you need to give us a hard time for being slightly inaccurate in the way we characterized him, this is maybe not the show for you. Again, we love our listeners, but for good grief,
Sometimes
you disappoint me, folks.
The weirdest argument I see about this Milo guy in particular, like, I've heard it enough that it's like an odd trend. It's sure. like a talking point is people say, look, Milo can't be racist because he has sex
guys.
With. But yeah, see?
Yeah.
You knew exactly what was sure. coming next, right?
Sure.
Oh, good grief.
Okay. So, A, even if he weren't racist against black people, there are other races besides black people.
No, there aren't. It's Pat Robertson said this. It's either black and white people or right. else it doesn't count.
And B, by that logic, you could say that there are no straight men who hate women.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure there are.
Yeah.
I want to spend a moment on this idiot's profession, okay? He's a professional troll and says so.
Right.
A troll's job, right, his form of entertainment is making people angry.
Yeah.
That is not – I got to say, that is not a job to be proud of having. Yeah, I think a person who works in the sewers shoveling up other people's turds is a prouder profession than the profession of angering people for a living.
Right.
And also,
more a productive citizen.
And that is not, and the fact that he just says whatever he needs to get people
riled up.
It does not let him off the hook for the kinds of things he chooses to get people riled up about. Okay, I'm sorry that does not make it okay to to anger people who care about social justice. By attacking social justice, you're attacking social justice. I'm sorry, that is not okay. Anyway.
Whew. Anyway.
He's a creep. If you like him, this is maybe not the show for you. Much as we love all of our listeners.
But, I mean, you're allowed to keep listening. We're not going to send death squads after you.
In fact, we can't. We can't stop you sending us angry letters either. That was the inherent imbalance in the show, unfairness that I was talking about at the beginning of the segment. Also, this is, I think, another point to bring up. We say things. We make jokes and we say things to tick people off, right?
Yeah.
The difference between us and people like that jerk, right, the difference between us and a troll is we actually hold the viewpoints we espouse and we actually mean what we say about those things. Never in a million years would we resort to, what we said didn't matter because we're just trolls.
Right.
No, we act. If we're trying to tick somebody off, it is because we want to tick off that particular kind of person because we think they're horrible or the viewpoints they espouse are horrible. Right. There's a point to what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe there was a point to what this fella was doing.
Maybe.
But if there is, then you get to look at precisely what he was doing and hold him accountable for it.
Right.
Right. You can look at what we're doing and hold us accountable for it because we are here. Even when we do satire, right? Like when I do Pat Robertson, right?
Yeah.
I am trying to expose things about Pat Robertson's viewpoint.
Yeah.
There is a point. I'm not just trying to tick off people that like Pat Robertson. I don't mind if I do, but that's not – that is not the sole purpose.
Right.
That is the sole purpose with a troll is to just tick people off. All right. There. I've said all I want to say about that.
Okay.
Are we done with that? Oh, my gosh. We're over time. So I will shut up. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Even those of you who probably should go find a different show.
All right. Shall I take us out?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, well, that was our game. Sorry for the team wipe. We'll be back in 2 weeks on the 15th of March to roll new characters. Until then, we leave you with I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma. Hey there, brother, don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt. And that you don't need the people because you've got your church. You got